Okay, so questions? Any questions before we start? Okay, so the project 3 is released. As I said, there is no coding whatsoever for this project. It's mostly using this tool right here. There's a little Bayes network tool that you can play with. You know, it's a Java applet. Okay, so it also has a tutorial for how to give the graph, how to query the graph, and so on. So you've seen the Bayes networks here, so you can actually play with, you know, giving Bayes networks. Now, of course, to be able to give the Bayes network, you need to have a problem, and I'm giving you a problem, which is essentially some made-up problem regarding, some real problem regarding Springfield, and you're going to basically specify the network, and you know, there are a whole bunch of tasks that you're supposed to do, et cetera. Okay. And it's basically most of these are just using the tool and making sure that you understand how Bayes network inference works. You are not writing the inference algorithms yourself. Today I will discuss how inference algorithms work, but you are not writing them yourself. Okay. So that's why it should be easy to get done. But now look at the tool and look at the project. Okay, other questions? Okay, so there is this saying in Islam that when Muhammad said that the mountain is going to come to him because he did this nice mystical thing, and the mountain didn't come up. And then he said, well, that's good actually that the mountain didn't come up, because if it came, it would have crushed us. So actually, I will go to the mountain. So I tried getting you to do blog questions on the blog, and you know, apparently it's busy. So I have decided to bring the blog here rather than just leave it there, especially because I think these are important things that we should discuss. And actually, two people hazarded some guesses, but we'll see whether they're right or wrong, but we can actually also discuss it here. So the first question was, if you're given the Bayes network but haven't gotten the conditional probability tables yet. So you've been given the topology of the Bayes network, but no conditional probability tables are given to you. Okay, so your friend shows up and says he has the joint distribution all ready for you, and you're not quite sure whether they are making this distribution up or whether they really are giving the joint distribution for this particular Bayes network. So how can you tell? That's the question. Okay, and the answer, and basically, you know, to understand this, you have to, for example, understand that the way you can actually call the bluff in this case is sort of like, remember I said last class that if you, so first thing to understand is the number of networks, the number of joint probability distributions that are consistent with the Bayes network topology. Let's say here is the topology again. Burglary, earthquake, alarm, Mary calls, John calls. That's my topology. So my question is, I can give how many joint distributions are there on five variables? Infinite number. How many joint distributions are there on five variables that will be consistent with this Bayes network? Still infinite, except it's a, hopefully, some of the ones which you could have given if you didn't know the joint distribution are no longer correct right now. So my question is, how can I tell that? So suppose, in fact, my friend did come up and make up a particular joint distribution that, it turns out, is not right. How could I have figured that out, that it's not right? And to understand this, think about the analogy I was asking you to think about last time, which is, if I ask you to think of an integer, how many integers can you think of? I mean, what's the space of number of integers you can think of? Infinite. Okay? Now if I say, think of an integer that's a product of five prime numbers. Think of an integer that's a product of five unique prime numbers. How many integers can you think of? Still infinite. If you now give me an integer that you thought about this way, can I once in a while call your bluff? Yeah, because I try to factorize it, and if it turns out that it's not a product of five prime numbers, then you know, you just did not know how to do multiplication. Right? So that's basically what I need to do here. Okay? I need to see whether the probability distribution that my friend gave can be factorized into, essentially, if it is this kind of a Bayes network, then I have a table here, I have a table here, I have a bigger table here, and then I have a small table here again and a small table here again, right? And the joint is now a product of these factors, these individual factors. Okay, so really what I need to do is to see whether joint distribution that's been given to me is factorizable. This is not a practical problem. It's not that you'll ever really be asked to do this, but I'm just making sure that you understand that Bayes network does put a restriction on the joint distributions that can be given. Okay, a simpler way to make sure that that factorization will be actually feasible is to check all the conditional independence assertions that will hold. Okay, in particular, you should be able to check that B is independent of E, given your your friend's probability distribution. Find out the marginal distribution for B, marginal distribution for E, marginal distribution for B and E, and show that B and E is nothing but B times E. Then you have shown that they're independent, right? And similarly, you can, for example, show that M is independent of J given A. That's one more conditional independence assertion. So you can check a bunch of these conditional independence assertions. If any of them fail, you know that your friend made up this distribution that's not consistent. Okay. Now, how would I check this independence assertion? Again, I have the joint distribution, right? If I have the joint distribution, I can compute this distribution. I can compute this distribution and show that they're equal. Okay. So it's just like when somebody is thinking of an integer which happens to be a product of five unique prime numbers, they are sort of constrained. Even though they can think of infinite distribution, infinite integers, they still have a smaller infinity than the other one. Similarly, if you are giving joint distributions that conform to a Bayes network, then you are constrained. You cannot give any random distribution. Okay? Do you understand that? Okay, now there is a, this is basically this being said here, whatever I just said just now. Okay, now the second question that I asked was, so now let's say the friend starts putting, you know, this time I show the Bayes network to my, you know, to whoever it is that I'm trying to get the numbers from, and they just put numbers into these tables. How do I know that the numbers would not violate some law of probability? How do I know that the numbers would not violate some law of probability? Do you understand what I'm saying? Of course, locally there are, you know, in fact, it turns out that as long as they give numbers that are between 0 and 1, okay, there is no local constraints that are being violated in any of these tables, right? Because we just found out, by the way, there was a zeroth question I forgot to mention, which is if I have M variables, all of which are influencing one variable here, right? And I'm giving a CPT, these are all Boolean variables, I'm giving a CPT for V given all these M variables, and there are numbers here. If you add those numbers up, how much can it get? How large can it get? It can get as large as the number of rows, right? Because each number, the only restriction is each number has to be between 0 and 1. So if they become all 1s, then it will be 2 power m. And this was a very telling example, just because last time somebody was wondering whether isn't it the case that these numbers are supposed to add up to 1? No, they don't have to add up to 1. In fact, they can be as large as 2 power n. All of them together can be as large as 2 power n. Okay, so there's really only one restriction for your friend to fill up these tables. Just think of a number between 0 and 1 and throw it in. Okay, that looks a little too iffy, right? I mean, what if these numbers somehow cause, you know, cosmic calamity? Something just blows up, some law of probability is broken. Okay, and the interesting point is no law of probability can be broken given the way we set it up, because we never ask probabilities that will complete the circle. The way you can get into trouble is if you ask your friend, what do you think is the probability of A, let's say, and what do you think is the probability of B, what do you think of the probability of A and B, and at this point you should shut up. And if you went on and asked, what do you think is the probability of A or B, then they give these numbers and there is a rule between those numbers. And if they violated that rule, then you are in trouble. But the way you are asking these numbers here, you never ask numbers such that a circle is completed. So you will never actually get into any violation of laws of probability. So this is a feature. This is a feature because we do not, so in fact you might, there are like two different way of thinking about it, which is if these numbers are really coming from the real world, and since the real world exists and it hasn't gone kaboom, these numbers cannot violate laws of probability. That's one way of thinking about it. But you and I know that these numbers are being made up by people. In fact, the point I made last time was that the main difference between frequentist and Bayesian probabilistic reasoning is that frequentists tend to believe that these numbers have some actual objective interpretation, that somebody actually did these experiments, you know, n tending to infinity, whole bunch of experiments, and then you took the ratios as the actual probabilities. Bayesians think we don't care. You can make up your numbers. Okay? So in fact, when you can make up your numbers, you should be worried. What stops you from getting into circular reasoning? All I'm saying is you can make up your numbers and still not get into circular reasoning, because I'm not asking too many questions. I'm asking just enough questions to define a consistent joint distribution. Now, of course, this leaves open the possibility that the numbers you made up have no real connection to the real world. So, for example, in the, you know, Bayesian, burglary earthquake, example, you could be an extreme optimist and think that no burglaries will happen, no earthquakes will happen. And so you would say prior probability of burglary occurring is 0, prior probability of earthquake occurring is 0. And your friend could be an extreme pessimist and say 1 and 1. Both of you have joint probability distributions that are consistent with what you said. Okay, if in fact you are actually right in being optimistic, then the decisions you make based on these numbers would wind up being correct. If your friend is right, then their decisions will wind up being correct. None of you will get into circular reasoning. You understand what I'm saying? So all we can say is that these numbers, as long as they're between 0 and 1, which is not too hard, right, then it would define a consistent probability distribution. And whether or not, and all we require is that if you come up with numbers, then we will make sure that we hold you accountable for it. So if you really believe that burglaries don't occur at all, and then you are paying a huge amount of money for anti-burglary insurance, then Bayes network inference tool will slap you silly. saying, you know, what's gone wrong with you. Okay, if you believe that there are no burglaries, why are you wasting your money? Okay, so you are consistent to your beliefs, that's all. And there is no circularity that will be allowed, because we only ask CPTs, and that's not enough to induce any circularity. Okay, so we're going like a little level deeper, just to make sure that, you know, if you start using it, things won't fall apart, and we are saying it cannot fall apart. Okay, and then again, as I said, this is Bayes networks. The reason these are called Bayes networks is not because they use Bayes rule, but really because a bigger reason for the Bayesian probabilistic reasoning is that we allow people to make up their numbers as long as they're between 0 and 1, and as long as they don't violate laws of probability. Okay. And in fact, that brings up this issue that of all the elementary probability rules, the one rule that is actually not, I mean, that sort of makes, doesn't sound totally axiomatic, is this. PARB is PA plus PB minus PANB, right? Right? Now, you know, you can make sense of it and say this is sort of related to, you know, Venn diagrams and all that stuff, but it turns out this is one thing that doesn't come right out of probability, right out of as an axiom. So, for example, the fact that the probability should be between 0 and 1, that's not surprising. I mean, that's just a random convention. You could make it between 0 and 100, and you can still have a probability theory. Okay? This is an interesting rule that we are actually sticking to, and in fact, the textbook has a nice little argument in, I think, in the chapter before Bayes network chapter as to why this rule, if you decide not to use this rule, okay, what happens to you? So, for example, it is important to ask yourself which of the things that you are taking as guaranteed axioms are not really, I mean, guaranteed statements, are they actually facts or are they axioms? So, for example, in the Euclidean geometry, of all the things in the Euclidean geometry, there is this one axiom that you can change, right? Which is parallel lines don't meet. Parallel lines do meet if you are sitting on a sphere. And then you will get non-Euclidean geometry, Lebovitzian geometry, and all sorts of fun geometry. So you can change that, you would get a consistent geometry. It's just not a geometry that you probably are interested in when you think that everything is a plane in front of you. Okay, so the question is, this looks like one of those axioms. If I give up this axiom, what do I lose? And the interesting argument is that if you don't believe this axiom, then I can make it hurt where it counts. If you don't believe in this axiom, then we can take part in a gamble and I'll take all your money. Not by showing a gun, but there's a proof that you will eventually lose all your money. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you don't believe this axiom, then I can set up gambles where you lose money. And to the extent you don't want to lose money, you want to believe in that axiom. Okay? Anyway, but we are never asking all four numbers here, and so we'll never get into any circularity. Okay. The last question that I asked on the, are there any questions on this stuff? Okay. The last question I asked is this, okay? We got into Bayes networks thinking they will provide a compact way of representing conditional independence assertions. Okay? Now the question is, if I have a set of conditional independence assertions that exactly hold in the real world, can I always come up with a Bayes network that exactly only has those conditional independence assertions, no more and no less? Okay, to talk about this, in fact, whenever we have world and syntax, we can talk about soundness and completeness. Right, for example, when we talked about entailment and derivation, entailment is the ground truth. Right? And if you came up with a, you know, modus ponens derivation, we could talk about, is it sound? In the sense, when it says something is proved, is it actually proved by entailment? And also we could talk about, is it complete? In the sense that when we say that something is actually proved by entailment, will this guy be able to prove it? Okay? And similarly, in this case, now we are interested in terms of conditional independence assertions. Okay? And then we can talk about two ideas similar to soundness and completeness. One is IMAP and the other is DMAP. I'm just making this up. You basically, you know that you need some sort of a soundness and completeness assertion. Okay? I would say IMAP holds if every CIA that the Bayes network captures is actually present in the real world. Do you understand what I'm saying? That means if the Bayes network thinks that certain things are are independent, then they are independent in the real world. Okay? So IMAP is sort of soundness. And then DMAP is completeness. DMAP is completeness. That means every conditional independence assertion that the Bayes network captures is actually present. Okay? Let me see. I'm sorry, I think I got it wrong. Distribution D, G is an IMAP of D if every conditional independence assertion captured by G actually holds in D. That's the soundness. Okay? And completeness or the DMAP is every CIA of D is actually reflected in G. Every conditional independence of A of D is actually reflected in G. Okay, what is the easiest way? So now if you get IMAP as well as DMAP, then you say you are exactly capturing a particular world. So you're only capturing those conditional dependencies that hold in the world, no more, no less. Okay, so my question was, if I asked you to write a network on just four variables, X, Y, W, and Z, such that exactly these independence assertions must hold. No more, no less. No more, no less. Can you do that? Can you write a Bayes network such that, so basically, we are talking about four variables, right? So there aren't that many graphs on four variables, really. So you can do this. That's a network. Let's check this. Is this capturing exactly those independence assertions? Do you understand what I'm saying? This is capturing. So now the question is it sound? Is it definitely capturing these independence assertions? First of all, let me ask this question. Is this definitely capturing these independence assertions? If I draw the network this way, then everything is independent of everything. So of course it is also capturing these. Okay, but my question, the other question would be, is everything that's captured here required here? No. So in this particular case, I would say this is complete, because every independence assertion that you want to capture has been captured, but it's not sound, because it's capturing more independence assertions than are actually present in the real world. Okay? How about this? Or this? Etc. So you can write various of these four node networks. The interesting thing is that you will never be able to be both complete and sound. You'll never be able to be both complete and sound with Bayes network. So what that means is Bayes networks are not expressive enough to capture every possible exact set of conditional independence assertions. I mean, it sounds as if it's not a big deal, but I mean, that they're sort of, you know, expressive enough, but they're not. Okay, here is a four variable network where this is not, you know, you can't capture it. If these are the only things that are allowed. Okay, now, so this is one zeroth level and this is 0-10th type network, which is x to y x is y, y is z, and w. That's a graph too, right? That's a graph too. Okay, is this sound? Is this sound? Is it capturing any independence assertion that's not holding in the real world? Is this capturing any independence assertion? Remember, before you know, if you're getting confused, independence assertions are shortcut. If the independence assertions hold, your reasoning becomes easier, right? So you should not assume shortcuts that don't hold in the world. If you assume shortcuts that don't hold in the world, then you become inaccurate in your reasoning. So my question is this sound, is it assuming any independence that don't hold there? Is it assuming any independence that don't hold there? This is a complete network. You're saying everything is dependent on everything. Okay? So it's actually sound. It's really conservative, but it's sound, all right? But is it complete? No, because it's missing, in fact, pretty much every independence assertion. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I told you that there is no four-layer, there is no four-vertex base network that can capture exactly these two independence assertions. So then I can talk about maybe a little less or maybe a little more. Okay? This one does a lot more than what is needed. This does a lot less than what is needed. What's the trade-off? If I have to choose between these two, which one is a better one? What? Sound, always. When in doubt, if I say sound, go with sound, right? Because that's the huge overall point of it. Don't assume shortcuts when they don't exist. Then you can't be wrong. If you miss shortcuts that do exist, you take forever to complete your exam. But you can't be wrong. Of course, I mean, you know, if you take the time pressure into account, you're sort of wrong, you lose the exam. But let's assume there's a lot of time, right? Then if you don't assume any shortcuts that don't exist, then you can't be wrong. So paranoids of the world have a point. If you assume everybody's out to get you, then you can potentially never be gotten. Of course, you also don't have a life. That's a different story. But you cannot be gotten if you assume everybody is going to get you. Right? Everything is going to get you. So in this case, I would say, if you take this, you cannot be inaccurate in your computations. If you take this, you'll be, but you'll be like deadly slow in terms of computation, because you have a complete distribution. If you take this on the other hand, you'll be lightningly fast. But all your numbers would be out the window. They have no actual connection to reality, because you are assuming everything is independent of everything else. Do you understand what I'm saying? So in trying to write a base network for some real world, you are interested in figuring out, first of all, what independence assertions do hold in that real world, and then model that using your network configuration. And I already told you that you'll never be able to exactly model it, because there are pathological cases where, you know, base networks may not be able to model the exact set that you have. So when you can't model the exact set, model less or more conditional independences. Less. Model less, not more. If you do more, then you lose accuracy. Okay? Now, the other interesting point about this is that, so for example, we won't go into it here, but this is like the only time you will hear it in the class, but in terms of graphical models for distributions, you have base networks, which we have been discussing a lot, okay? But there are these other things called Markov networks or Markov random fields. And that formalism is an undirected network formalism. There are no arrows anymore. Okay? So if you drew a network like this, this would be a Markov network on X, Y, Z, W, and it turns out that would be an exact match for these independence assertions. It exactly captures only those two and no more and no less. So that sort of looks as if Markov networks are more expressive, at least from the conditional dependence assertions point of view, than Bayes networks. But then there is this. If you have a network like this, okay, where one of the interesting things in this network is I have just three variables, x and y, and they both affect z. Okay, so here the independence assertions that hold are x is independent of y given nothing. If you don't say anything, x is independent of y. Okay, but the moment you say something about z, x is not independent of y. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the whole point of Bayes networks, because the children can change, make the parents be dependent on each other. Okay, and so in this particular case, this network would capture exactly those independence assertions, but there is no equivalent Markov network that can capture them. So it has to go for a subset of the independence assertions. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so the picture that you have is, if this is the set of all distributions, there is a subset which can be captured just by Bayes networks exactly, there is a subset which can be captured by Markov networks exactly, there is an intersection, there are a bunch of distributions that can be captured by each of them, both of them exactly, and then furthermore there are distributions out there that can be captured by either of them exactly. Now it looks like a very depressing thing that somebody cannot capture something exactly, but it's not, because if you don't want it to be, if you can't capture it exactly, just give up one of the independence assertions and you will still be accurate. So it's not, this picture is not as pessimistic, should not be seen as pessimistic as it might look. Okay, the fact that you can't exactly capture a set of independence assertions doesn't mean too much, because you can always go for a subset of them, a largest set of these dependence assertions that you can capture, and that will be fine. Because as I pointed out to you here, if you are paranoid, you can't be wrong. If you assume no independence assertions hold in the world, you can't be wrong. Question? Okay, so that's basically what I just said. Okay, and you can go back and read it. So this one, for example, is saying that while if I go with this, this will capture every independence assertion, but it captures more. It assumes even more shortcuts than are actually present. That's why it's unsound but complete. Whereas this one captures nothing, so anything it captures is definitely true, but it's not capturing anything, so it will become very inefficient. Okay? And one other thing to understand is that even though I won't do it in this class, both Bayes networks and Markov networks really do have a lot in common. Both of them try to factorize the joint distribution. Okay? Factorize the joint distribution such that, one joint distribution becomes a product of multiple, small distributions. Now, the small things, okay, so factorized joint distribution, the only difference is in the Bayes network, the factors are all distributions themselves, because they're all conditional probability distributions. In the Markov networks, they don't actually have any probabilistic semantics. They're just k things that will be multiplied to give you this. For example, just to, mess with your mind, let me say the following thing. Suppose I ask you to think of an integer that is a product of exactly four complex numbers. An integer that's a product of four complex numbers. So the way you got to the integer was to go out of the real number system. Think of complex numbers, and you do know that sometimes when you multiply complex numbers, you get real numbers. You take complex conjugates. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the factors themselves were not integers. Okay, that's what happens in Markov networks. The factors for the Markov networks don't have probabilistic semantics. Whereas in Bayes networks, factors are essentially computed, conditional probability tables. And Markov networks have another interesting thing, which is that it's just a little graph. So if you want to see if something is independent of something given something, just remove those. If X is independent of Y given Z and W, because if I remove Z and W, there's no way you can get from X to Y. They separate the graph. They just separate directly. Okay? And similarly, if I do X and Y out, then Z and W are independent. And those are the only things that actually they capture. In Bayes networks, the graph theoretic separation won't be enough. Graph theoretic separation won't be enough because sometimes there are dependencies even when they are connected, and there are independences when they are connected too. Okay? That's all I'll get into. This is sort of couple of levels deeper than what you expected to know from when you first hear about Bayes networks and Markov networks. But it's worth knowing so that as soon as you get out of this class, you'll start hearing about other structured probabilistic representations. Okay. Questions? Okay. So I'm going back to doing inference on Bayes networks. Okay. So we'll again forget about all these other guys. Forget about this big bad world. Think of being in the cocoon of Bayes networks, and you don't care whether they're actually capturing the real world or not. Somebody gave you the Bayes network. Okay. And you're just trying to do inference with it. Okay. Now, first of all, what kind of inference tasks can you do? Of course, you do all the inference tasks that you were doing before too. Okay. In particular, you would be given some evidence variables and what their values are, and you would be asked the distribution on the query variables. Okay. And that's the most normal kind of a question that you ask in the Bayes network, which is, given some evidence variables, what's the posterior distribution? So first of all, if I give you a network, right, you already know that it defines a joint distribution. Just that network defines a joint distribution, right? Okay, so if you don't know anything, then the joint distribution. And if you want to know, for example, let's say, what's the probability that there's an earthquake? If I give this network and I ask you what's the probability distribution on the earthquake, the probability that it happens and probability it doesn't happen. Because it's only two values, if you get one number, you can get the other number. In general, in fact, if it's a multi-valued variable, let's say earthquake can happen really big, start of middle, and won't happen at all, then there are three values, and you need at least n minus one probabilities for that variable so that you can get the distribution. So in general, we are interested in distribution. Okay? And the prior distribution of earthquake is easy because it's available directly in the network. I can also ask, what's the prior, if this network is to be true, what's the prior distribution that John will call? You can compute that because you have the joint distribution. You can marginalize everything else, and you will get John will call, John won't call, and the two numbers will add up to one. And those are the prior distributions. That's just available directly. And then the more useful questions you might have is, I just got a call from John. John just called. Now what's the probability that earthquake occurred? No, what's the probability, let me say that, burglary occurred. Okay, what's the probability that burglary occurred now that I know John has called? Previously, it was just the prior distribution, the numbers that were present. Now it's no longer that, it's going to change because in fact, the children here, the causal children here will increase your, or reduce your belief in this particular variable. In this particular case, once John calls, you tend to believe more that the burglary occurred. That's how the numbers would be. Right? Now I can also ask, what's the probability now actually not only John called, but I also found that the alarm is going off. I'm sorry, not only John called, but I also found on the TV that earthquake just happened. Now what's the probability that burglary occurred? It's a different number again. You know that, you know, distribution changes as the evidence keeps coming in. In this particular case, most of you would think, what would you think? Most of you would think that the probability that the burglary occurred has increased or reduced because earthquake happened. Reduced, at least for a while. After a little bit of time, then people will just come into the streets and start burgling. Right? That's exactly what happens whenever lights go off or whenever police are doing something else. Okay? But at least for that few seconds, burglary chances reduced. Right? Okay? So, basically, you are always given evidence, you're computing posterior distribution on a set of query variables. Okay? The word is posterior because previously it already had a distribution. That's the prior distribution, not knowing anything. And as the evidence accumulates, you recompute the distribution. Rather than you compute it yourself, you want the Bayes network to compute it for you. I mean, the inference task to compute for you. Okay? So you can have simple queries, you can have conjunctive queries, and one of the, in the beginning we tend to think of single variable queries. Single variables as the evidence keeps increasing. Once you start have conjunctive variables, that means given some given some evidence, I'm interested in knowing the probability distribution over a subset of other variables. That's sort of a subjoint distribution. It's a conditional subjoint distribution, right? Now, there are actually two kinds of things you might be interested in asking in such kind of scenarios. One is most probable explanation. Given this evidence, what is the exact state the entire network is currently in? Do you understand what I'm saying? Given this evidence, what's the exact state the entire network is currently in? And of course, obviously, you won't know. So what you're interested in is, what's the most likely state that the entire network is in, given this evidence? Obviously, if I already told you earthquake occurred, John called, then this is true. The question is this true, false? Is this true, false? Is this true, false? And what's the most likely configuration for the other three guys, given these two? I'm only interested in max possibility. Okay, that's the most probable explanation query. Okay, that's essentially, again, what you're doing is you're trying to compute the joint distribution over these three variables and finding for which particular configuration is the value highest. But if I'm only interested in the highest one, I don't need to compute the entire distribution, it turns out. I can just pick the one that's the most likely one. Okay, and then the other one, now what's interesting is that when I'm talking about the three variables together and I'm asking what's the most likely configuration for all three variables together, okay, and let's say that winds up saying this is true, this is true, this is false. Now if I change my, now I ask you what's the most likely configuration for just one of these variables. It doesn't have to be, so if just because I said that all three variables together are all true, my answer as to what's the most likely configuration for this one variable doesn't have to be true. It can be false. Okay? And to understand this, as I'm, you know, going on and you are waking up and sleeping, right? And once in a while, you would have heard that I just said all of you are going to get a D. And you very quickly hear the word D and you wake up. Okay? Actually, the word D apparently, the letter D apparently has a lot of meaning. When I was a grad student long back, I used to have a friend who is a TA. And then, you know, he also was from India and he had a nice little accent. And then somebody called him and asking him something. And he said, you know, the word, and the person on the other side didn't get it. And the word, so he was trying to do the Ricky Ricardo thing and start talking about the letters in the word so that they'll understand what letters. At some point of time, he had to say D, and they said D as in grade, and then they right away understood what he was trying to say. And at least they didn't ask any more questions. But the point is that if I say something, you know, a long sentence, you may have, you are trying to decide, are you trying to decide what is the sentence I said? Which is, what's the most likely explanation that the first word is the, second word exam, the third word is, the fourth word is going to be tough. Okay? That's the most likely explanation of what I said just now. Versus, did he say the exam or the exercise? You know, that probability is different. Okay? Normally, when you're doing speech recognition, you are trying to do essentially the most likely thing people have said, given you heard some phonemes entering your sleepy head. Okay? And if you ask yourself, what exactly is the fourth word they said? That probability might be wrong. That might actually be different. And sometimes I misspeak. And I actually probably said exercise when I meant exam. But I still, you will be able to say that the most likely entire sentence I said doesn't have the most likely single word I said. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? So this is why we differentiate between most probable explanation as a separate inference task. And this actually happens only when you are interested in queries where you are talking about multiple query variables rather than single query variables. Okay, so you're talking about the joint distribution over multiple query variables, and most probable explanation is exactly what's the most likely, what's the entry in that joint distribution that has the highest value. Okay? And then I can also ask maximum a posteriori, which is most likely assignment to some variables given the evidence. Not all the variables, but just some variables. Now when I say some variables, so what happens is the variables that I didn't mention, they have to be marginalized. Okay? So from a technical point of view, if I ask for every variable, it turns out that the reasoning can be essentially done in terms of max operations. Maxing operations. You know, maximizing. Here you have to do both sums and maximums. Okay? So they have two different names, most probable explanation and maxima posteriori. Now, maxima posteriori is the most general idea, right? Because you can also have, if you have a single variable, both of these are the same. Do you understand that? If you have a single variable, both of these are the same. If you have multiple variables, they are actually different. Okay. So these are all these inference tasks that you can do. At least understand that we'll be interested in solving single variable given bunch of evidence. So that at least you want to support. Okay. Now one of the interesting things is, depending upon the inference task, there may be specialized algorithms that are really, really good. You know, for those of you who may know speech recognition, for example, how many of you have heard Viterbi decoding? Viterbi, by the way, even if you don't care about him, he started Qualcomm. How many of you have heard of Qualcomm? Okay, how many of you have heard of Eudora, the old mailing system? Even less. Okay, but Qualcomm. So we reached a maximum at Qualcomm. So Viterbi started Qualcomm, which has really nothing to do with his real technical, reason why he's well known. And, you know, what he did was essentially come up with, for certain kinds of Bayes networks, he figured out the fastest way to compute most probable explanation. Okay? Fine. Now, we're just going to look at how these inferences are done without making any assumptions about the structure of the Bayes network. Okay? So, the first idea, zeroth idea, is given a Bayes net, we can compute all the entries in the joint probability distribution, and once you know, then you're on your own. You can actually use them to answer any query. I made a huge distinction between these, but they're all really just probabilistic queries. And if you have joint distribution, you can answer everything. Right? Much of efficiency in probabilistic inference is about trying to answer the query without explicitly computing the entire joint distribution. Because oftentimes you can have networks that can have thousands of variables. And if they're Boolean already, you have 2 power, what? How many numbers are you going to need in the worst case? 2 power 1,000 numbers in the worst case. And you don't want to recompute all of them. You know, you want to just look at the part of the joint that actually is needed to answer the query that you need to answer. Okay? So this at least you should know. This, if you don't understand this, then, you know, we wasted all our time in terms of going into probabilistic reasoning at all. Okay, so the rest from here on is how to do this faster. And to do this faster, basically what you want to do is implicitly enumerate only the part of joint that is needed. Okay, or realize that it's a network with probabilities, so sample. Toss coins and sample, and use the samples to compute the probability that you need without ever having computed the entire joint distribution. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so for example, if all you needed was how often, so suppose you wanted this, what's the probability that there's burglary given John called, right? I could ignore this entire course. Just spend a lot of time monitoring John's calls. Okay, today John called, I went home, there was a burglary. So that one time, the both numerator and denominator increased by one. Tomorrow, John called, there was no burglary. Day after tomorrow, John called, there was no burglary. Again, Saturday, John called, and there's a burglary. So, over a period of your lifetime, you figured out that John called about 1,000 times, okay, 10,000 times, and then there were about 80 times there were actual burglaries. So that's your probability. You don't need this stuff. You can compute probabilities by living it. Right? Okay, so the question is, what's wrong with living it? If you can just live it, you don't have to go through school. Do you understand that? You can, you know, basically the problem with living it is sometimes you will be dying through it. Right? Right? And when you die, then you don't get to play anymore. You know, death is the final ultimate end. Right? And so, death can be financial and it can be bankruptcies and all this fun stuff, but overall, the problem with the living through it is it's very inefficient, okay, and you can have fatal consequences. So the question, of course, is think through it rather than live through it. That's the whole of your life. You went to school because you could think through rather than do it and see what happens. Okay, and the same thing here too. The question is, if I spent all the time and came up with a base network for this world, I should be able to compute this number without actually having to live through the world. I should be able to sample the world in a virtual way. And that's what the sampling techniques are. And it turns out that sampling techniques are very easy to understand, and really they are very cheap very cheap programs to write, extremely easy programs to write. Okay, and in fact, what's more interesting is, for once, lazy people actually win, because sampling techniques are the best way of solving large-scale inference tasks even now. We will talk about exact inference approaches, which is this, but sampling and computing the probabilities based on sampling turns out to be pretty much the state of the art right now for large-scale inference, large-scale networks. Okay, and when you're thinking about sampling, you have to remember that what you're trying to do is live through it, but synthetically live through it. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you really live through it, then this whole course is wasted, and your whole life is your whole school life is wasted. Okay, if all they said is do the right thing, just go into the world, do the right thing, and once in a while you will survive, otherwise you don't. That's not particularly good. Okay. So now, before we go into the details, let's just see, prospectus. What do we expect is the difficulty of doing these numbers, this computation? Okay. First of all, you shouldn't be surprised. Would you be surprised if I tell you that Bayes network inference, in the worst case, is NP-hard? No. Because Bayes probabilistic reasoning is more general than logical reasoning. If you make all the numbers ones and zeros in the CPTs, then you get a deterministic network. It's a deterministic Bayes network. Okay? And there too you can ask these questions. In fact, one of the things that you will be doing in the Springfield project is to make you realize that Bayes networks are really, once you understand Bayes networks, you also understand the special case, which is propositional reasoning. And the same exact, if you have a reasonably big hammer, then you can do eggs as well as nails with them, right? Break both eggs and nails And so with Bayes network reasoning tools, you can actually also do propositional reasoning. Okay, and since propositional reasoning is already NP-hard, you know that. So you're already prepared for the worst. You can't do worse than, you don't expect to do less than NP-hard. So I'll relieve you by saying it's only NP-hard in the worst case, sort of in that age period. But the question, of course, is for propositional reasoning, we found there are special cases where inference, even in the worst case, is less than exponential. Can anybody remind me one of those cases? Propositional reasoning. Remember, propositional reasoning, we wind up doing resolution, refutation. That we know is NP-hard because it will be equivalent to doing truth table, and so it's NP-hard. But we looked at other kinds of inference mechanisms. Hunt clauses. If all you happen to know about the world are Hunt clauses, so all you happen to know about the world are Hunt clauses, then modus ponens winds up being just as good as resolution theorem proving. And modus ponens is actually polynomial time. Okay? So if your world, all you happen to know in the about the world is Hahn, that means your world is a nice world. Okay? What is a nice world from probabilistic reasoning point of view? For example, if every variable is independent of every other variable, that would be a nice world too. Even in propositional logic, that's a nice world, by the way. What is a Bayes network configuration for propositional logic where if you write the propositional variables as a network, they are just disconnected vertices? Give me a propositional logic database on three propositional variables, P, Q, and R. Give me some, here are my propositional variables, right? Give me some propositional logic constraints such that essentially, you are saying P, Q, and R are completely independent. What? Nothing. There's nothing. No constraints. Again, connecting parts of your life is about the only way anything holds. Okay. So that basically you are saying that I'll have cataclysmic amnesia and I'll forget 28 years of schooling. Or since everything is connected to everything, I can't selectively lose pieces. Okay, I'm just connecting Bayes networks to propositional logic. If you remember that, hopefully you won't lose this. Okay, and so in propositional logic, if I just said there are n variables and the set of constraints is empty, you see, that's really nice because any random assignment is correct. It's a model. And any theorem you want to prove, I'll prove. Okay, but then we went beyond that and we said if in fact everything that you happen to know is Hahn clauses, you do have constraints, but all those constraints are Hahn clauses, which is a more general case, right? And even in that case, propositional inference is polynomial. So the interesting question would be, what can you say similar to that for Bayes networks? And in fact, understanding the tractability results from propositional reasoning to probabilistic reasoning is not a bad thing at all. A lot of people are even doing it now, okay? So in general, ultimately it turns out that it can be connected to the graph topology. It can be connected to the graph topology. Okay. So for example, if the graphs are singly connected networks, okay, it's a directed graph, right? It's a Bayes network, it's a directed graph, so there can't be any cycles anywhere. Okay. So since there is no cycles, then about the only thing that you can say is for a given two nodes in the network, is there at most one path between them or is there more than one path between them? If there is at most one path between any pair of nodes in the network, then it's called singly connected network. Okay? So for example, if I have this network here, is that singly connected? It is. Because at most, it's not exactly, at most. Okay? How about this? A, B, C, D, E. Is that singly connected network? Yes. So the example that we've been spending all our life is actually turns out to be an easy example. Okay? There is a result which basically says that singly connected network, for singly connected networks, inference is polynomial time. Inference is polynomial time. So the big bad guys will come when you have multiply connected networks. That means there's more than one path between any two nodes. Here is an example of such a network. Okay, so here, cloudy, sprinklers, rain, vectors. Cloudy affects sprinklers and rain, both, in different ways. Right? And then sprinklers affect wet grass, rain affects wet grass. So that's my network. Now, between cloudy and wet grass, now I have two paths. Is it singly connected now? No. Okay? So, this is the bad guy in Bayes networks. If you ever have multiply connected networks, then inference on them is not polynomial. Singly connected network, inference is polynomial. And I leave it to you, for those of you who are adventurous enough, to make the connection between this and this versus Hahn clauses and non-Hahn clauses there. Okay? Once again, there is a disjunction here. When wet grass is affected by cloudy, it could be going this way or this way. Whereas in a singly connected network, there's just one path, one causal path through which it affects. Okay? But, so the point is, and it turns out that, by the way, that since Bayes networks are more general than propositional logic, right, then it must be the case that if a bunch of propositional variables have this configuration, singly connected network configuration, then those problems, inference problems on that, are easy to do. Now, you may not have thought about graphs with respect to propositional variables, but you definitely thought about graphs with respect to something very close. You just did it, you did it twice. CSP. What's CSP? CSP is propositional logic under a different name. Okay? So whatever I am saying here basically holds also true for constraint networks. This can be seen as constraint networks or Bayesian networks. If the variables are probabilistic, then they become Bayesian networks. If the variables are just, and then basically in a constraint network, of course there is no directionality, but there is, two variables are constrained together, then there's a link between them. And if they are binary constraints, then you have a link between them. And it turns out that you can actually say that in any binary constraint satisfaction problem, if the constraint network is singly connected, then they would be easy to solve. They would be polynomial time. Okay? And otherwise, they will be exponential. So these are bad guys for Bayes networks. Now, here's the interesting thing. If once you see the enemy, and the enemy looks like this, right? I mean, I assume that you don't like exponential computation. Okay? If the enemy looks like this, why can't we convert the enemy into this? What I do is I take sprinklers and rain, combine it into a super variable called sprinklers plus rain. Okay? Now sprinklers plus rain takes how many values now? So sprinklers plus rain, and so cloudy affects sprinklers plus rain, and sprinklers plus rain affects wet grass. That's it. Is this a singly connected network? So the inference on this is polynomial. The inference on that is exponential. It is just prove P equal to NP. I probably proved. Those of you who are asleep probably missed the proof. Obviously, I did not. Why? Because you talk about complexity in the input size. You talk about complexity in the input size. Okay? Now, in this case, the input here is already exponential in the input here. You may think, how can that be? There are fewer nodes here. No, but that's not the issue. The issue is CPTs. This guy's CPT is going to be exponentially larger than these individual CPTs. If I take n variables and combine them, n Boolean variables and combine them, I'll have now all of a sudden a 2 power n sized CPT. I just pushed the complexity into this bucket. That's why this bucket became fat. Okay? And so it's polynomial in this fat network, which is basically exponential in the thin network. Okay? But if you happen to have an exact algorithm, exact inference algorithm for singly connected networks, and you know that it works fine without any problems for singly connected networks, and you have this huge big network where there's just a couple of instances of this sort of subgraphs where there are multiple paths between a couple of nodes, and this is the only code you want to use, this is the only one that is available, so you want to use it, this provides you a way. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it allows you to use singly connected network algorithms, of which there are many more efficient singly connected network algorithms. You can use them to solve any network. Okay? So that's the basic point of this. Okay. Now, I said, in passing that, complexity cannot be any less than NP hard. Okay? And this is not too hard to show to yourself. In fact, you can show, this slide basically shows that 3SAT can be reduced, 3SAT can be reduced to a Bayes network inference problem. And since computing 3SAT, computing a model for a 3SAT problem is known to be NP-hard, so this would be NP-hard. And actually what's interesting is I was sort of lying when I said it's no worse than probably, propositional reasoning. It turns out that if you go more into the structure of the complexity, it turns out that actually probabilistic reasoning is a little harder. Because you need to, in essence, compute the number of models in a Bayes network. Each model has a separate weight. You need to compute all the models and sort of sum up those numbers. And so that's sort of like not just finding a single model, but counting models. And that's known to be harder in SAT 2. Okay, so Bayes networks are sort of a little harder than propositional reasoning, but they're more general. Okay? So, this is the summary for the bad news about complexity of Bayes network inference. Okay? It's NP-hard, actually sharp p-complete, because we have to count models in general for Bayes networks. But they are polynomial for a large subclass called singly connected networks, where the only requirement you have is that between any two nodes, there is at most one path, one directed path. Okay? Now, the other interesting thing is, since I already kind of told you that I would be interested in solving these sometimes using sampling techniques, right? I would be interested in solving these using sampling techniques. Now, when I do sampling techniques, you know that there is no such thing as exact number. As you keep increasing the number of, experiments, then as n tends to infinity, you become the real probability. So, once you start thinking about sampling techniques, you are also thinking of approximate computations. Okay, one of the weird problems about propositional reasoning is you can't talk about approximate computation directly in the simple propositional reasoning I told you. If I ask you, is P true or P false, is it sort of approximately? What do you mean approximately? Is it really true or really false? But probabilistic reasoning gets you to say, well, if P is true with point, given all you know, P is true with probability 0.7, false with probability 0.3. So it's really more true than false. Okay? So the question, of course, is can I approximate those numbers? 0.7, 0.3, and so you're trying to figure out, for example, which disease, D1 or D2, the patient has. Okay? The real numbers, if you spent all your lifetime and computed the exact probabilities using the Bayes network, they would have said this is 0.7053 and this is 0.02175894 and they don't add up to 1, by the way, because there could be other diseases, always extra diseases. Okay, but these are the two diseases that I'm trying to make my mind up between, you know, which one is the medicine I want to give this guy. Okay, and it turns out this is this and this is this these are real numbers. But suppose I kind of got approximate numbers for this, and I said, oh no, this is sort of like 0.6 and this is sort of like 0.3. I could still do the decision correctly. Do you understand what I'm saying? Patient won't die. So the question is, can I have any guarantees about approximation? If I say, if I can basically compute probabilities to an approximate degree of correctness, how hard would that problem be? Okay, turns out that to make the life and the day really cheerful, it turns out that even approximation, probably correct, probable degree of approximation results, they're all depressing. Okay, so if you say I must be only epsilon away from the real probability, where epsilon is given by you, then the only way I can guarantee that is with an algorithm that is exponential in that epsilon. Do you understand what I'm saying? And similarly, if I say the epsilon could be absolute or relative, both ways. So epsilon being absolute means that its real value, so the real value minus the value I have, cannot be more than epsilon. Relative means this value divided by this value. That's what I'm bounding. It turns out both are bad. Both cases, worst case scenario for Bayes networks is exponential, is NP-hard. Okay. So with that good news, in your pocket, now we'll talk about exact and approximate inference algorithms when we come back next class. And in the exact inference algorithms, we will essentially talk about enumeration, which is just a slightly more smarter way of doing the zeroth idea. Just a slightly more smarter way of doing the zeroth idea. And then, so after that, and when you do that, then you will find that the computation you're doing looks like this, where some products are being repeatedly recomputed. And this is something that you should learn as a computer scientist, is never do something twice. Throw it into the memory. Okay? And there is an idea called variable enumeration algorithm, which in essence remembers intermediate results. So in essence, what it would do here is it will do bottom up, and when it computes this, it will remember this, so that when it comes here, it doesn't have to redo this. That makes the algorithm much faster. Okay. Now the question, of course, we will look at is how big can these intermediate tables become? And for certain variable orders, the tables can be small. For certain others, they can be large. So if you can find the right order, you can really win big. And it turns out that finding the right order is just as hard, right, as actually finding the optimal order is just as hard as doing the inference. But there are heuristics. Just like you have CSP, variable ordering heuristics, there are heuristics for Bayes networks. And then we'll come back after that and then look at sampling algorithms, which are really fun because it's just tossing coins. Always tossing coins, except the only difference is you're going to toss coins that are biased. Okay? So, for example, this is the last one I really will do. In the earthquake scenario, right? Earthquake, burglary, alarm, John calls, Mary calls. Suppose alarm basically says that if earthquake is true and burglary is false, this is alarm is going to happen with 0.7 probability. So when I come here and I'm trying to decide whether alarm is going to be true or false, and I have already realized that earthquake is true and burglary is false by now, okay, I just basically get myself a shiny coin which comes heads 0.7 of the time and tails 0.3 of the time. And toss it. You can't just say, oh, it's 0.7, so I'll assume it's heads. If you do that, you're dead. You actually have to toss. So you do have to really live, even in synthetic simulation, but you live in simulation. All you do is toss a coin. But a computer doesn't have to have a real little, you know, robot hand that tosses the coin. It turns out we have pseudo-random number generators, which essentially approximate tossing of coins. And that will give you an approximate way, sampling-based ways of computing these probabilities. And some of them are really nice. By the time, if we can get to Markov chain Monte Carlo, in fact, likelihood weighting itself is very nice. And when we get to Markov chain Monte Carlo, that's pretty much one of the state-of-the-art approaches. And it's extremely easy to understand. In fact, all of these are very easy to understand compared to, you know, let's say variable elimination. And what I did not give here is there is an entire 2-3 textbooks worth of material there about all other approaches people have come up with for special cases of Bayes network inference, you know, which actually take into account certain types of topology restrictions on the network and really exploit it. Okay? Come back next class.